You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And we are here briefly to introduce episode 3 of the Adam Blythe interviews. Who is it this week, Lionel? Drum roll, please.
It is Tesh Benoot, Belgian rider with Lotto Soudal, one of Adam Blythe's teammates, and a rider who really sort of burst into our consciousness in 2015 when he was fifth at the Tour of Flanders when still a very young man. He's still only 25 now, so I think he's 21 at the time. My first kind of big memory of Tesh Benoot was at the Omloop Het Nieuwsblad the following year, 2016, where his fan club, because he's a student at the university in Ghent, his fan club seemed to consist entirely of students who had been drinking since early in the morning. And it was kind of the contrast between the sort of toughness of having to ride Omloop Het Nieuwsblad whilst also studying, and the other students who had probably rolled in very late from a Friday night out and were carrying on with their weekend celebrations and supporting Benoot. And he was third that day. He was in a pretty select group. Greg Van Avermaet, Peter Sagan and Luke Rowe were the other three riders who came up to the Citadel in the park there next to the famous indoor track. Benoot's sort of Achilles heel really is that he's not a fantastic sprinter, so that is probably why he only has one professional win to his name so far, despite being prodigiously talented, so much so that he was 20th in the Tour de France a couple of years ago as well. So not just a Flandrien, but a real all-rounder.
Absolutely. I interviewed him a couple of years ago. I was very impressed by him, and I remember his teammate Maxime Montfort at Lotto Soudal just sort of he said that his big problem is that he can do everything, and so it's and he's still, as you say, a young rider, but he can ride the Flandrian races, the Ardennes races, week-long stage races and grand tours, and so he's still perhaps not at the point yet of specializing at one thing, and he also needs, I think, to be really, really hard. We saw that at Strade Bianche where he won on a really tough day, where it was a sort of survival of the fittest and the hardest, and he needs races to be like that. We'll see if this week's Tour of Flanders might produce a day like that, and that could be a day for him. But I'm looking forward to listening to this conversation between Adam Blythe and Tesh Benoot, teammates, as you say, at Lotto Soudal. Before we cross over to it, quick mention for our headline sponsors at the Cycling Podcast. That's Rafa, of course, and the new Rafa RCC, that's Rafa Cycling Club shoe, has been launched. It's available exclusively to members of the RCC. If you want to join the RCC, go to rafa.cc and see all the benefits of being a member. But the shoe is a very beautiful Rafa shoe with full carbon fiber sole, coated in an incredibly thin and light no slip hard wearing rubber for moments off the bike. It's got a classic Rafa design and the double wall lacing that provides a more comfortable hugging fit around the foot than any other shoe on the market. As well as a new Rafa RCC shoe, check out the EF Gone Racing films. There's one recently from Milan San Remo, upcoming from Dwars Door Vlaanderen and the Tour of Flanders. Subscribe to Rafa Films on YouTube to see all the EF Gone Racing films. And without further ado, shall we cross over to Belgium and a hotel room somewhere in Flanders, and Adam Blythe and Tesh Benoot. Is there a language warning on this one, Lionel? Maybe a little, a mild language warning this week for the conversation between Adam Blythe and Tesh Benoot.
You are listening to a special episode of the Cycling Podcast. Adam Blythe interviews.
Hello, everyone. I'm with a teammate here today, Tesh Benoot. We're currently in Bluewoods Hotel, is it?
Yeah.
Bluewoods Hotel in close to Kortrijk. We're deep into the classics now, so being here for 10 days and another week to go, I think. Oh, you don't do Scheldeprijzen.
Yeah, but Roubaix is 1.5 week to go. Right. And Then I go straight to Amstel Gold Race. So for me, it's a small 3 weeks to go now.
Oh, it's not long.
Yeah.
So I've got new microphones. Yeah. Just to let everyone know, so if it's a bit shit, I'm sorry. Sorry, shouldn't swear. Right, so question one, Tish. I don't really know how you started cycling. It was a long time ago, or...?
Yeah, I started when I was only 11 years old. I think when I was 4 or 5 years old, I already wanted to start cycling. But it's not so easy in Belgium. Yeah, it's easy to start cycling, but to buy immediately a bike, it's expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
My parents were a bit like waiting on a good moment to let me start. So I started to play soccer first when I was 6 till I was 12 years old. And then when I was 11, I got my first racing bike also. And I immediately did some races. And from then on, I immediately knew I preferred to ride a bike than to be a goalkeeper. So I was a goalkeeper. And yeah. From then on, only cycling.
Like Van Avermaet.
Yeah, that's something I recognize a lot, actually. That cyclists who were before soccer players, they most of the time they were a goalkeeper.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it's by accident or something, but yeah.
Big hands.
Yeah, big hands.
Big hands, big shoes.
It's also the most individual position in the team.
Yeah,
I think to be a good cyclist, you need to be a little bit individual, more individual oriented. Yeah,
I agree. I'm going to flick you in the next races. I'm going to try anyway. No, I'm not. And you were good straight away, or not really? You won some races directly.
No,
or it took a long time.
Actually, it took some time. Till I was like second year under 17 or something.
Yeah,
like nieuwelingen we call it in Belgium.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I won some races, and then I made a big step going to the juniors. Then I started to win bigger races. I did the Worlds in Valkenburg, where I did a good race. I was 12th, I think, but in the sprint I got my wheel broken because of Van der Poel.
yeah?
He rode into my wheel with his pedal, yeah. Had some spokes out. Yeah, and then I got a contract with the under-23 team of Lotto Soudal. So,
hey, you have to remember this with Van der Poel on Sunday, yeah? He's racing on the Quermont, go...
I have to do it with him now, yeah. Maybe, yeah.
Sorry, mate, see you later.
yeah. Yeah, so then I went to the under-23 team with Kurt van der Wouwer. And there I was only 2 years. And then I signed my first contract with the professional team, with the World Tour team. So actually, I made every year a step forward.
Yeah.
A bigger step than my colleagues of my age. Like, still, I was junior. There were a lot of guys who were better than me in Belgium, or a few guys. So I take a big move every year. Till now, I hope so. Yeah.
Same as me. I was with Kurt for 1 year.
Also under 23.
Yeah, I only did 1 year though. I had to ride for a team called Sprinters Maldoren for 1 year.
And then with Davo.
Yeah, and then Davo.
Yeah.
So we took the same path, but you won a few more races after that than me. A big one. So then when you turned professional, in 2015.
Yeah, first I was stagiaire in 14.
Yeah.
But then I already signed for the year after.
And you were studying still,
Till now, actually, I'm still in university.
Still?
Yeah. Actually, I'm not on university, but I'm doing it myself a bit. I'm doing applied economics, business economics in Ghent.
Yeah.
And I do a few courses a year, so I'm now in my master's degree. So, I have 3 of the 4 years done, and then I did like 1/5 of the last year. So...
I didn't know this.
Yeah. I did an exam in beginning of December, I think, this year. And then after the opening weekend, I did one.
Yeah.
When I was 3 weeks on altitude in Sierra Nevada, I had time to study a bit. And I got this far now. So I want to finish it, and then we'll see what we do next.
And do you go to the parties? You know, in England every year, when the new university students come, it's called freshers. It's the same in Belgium.
Yeah, Yeah, yeah. And like the Conti Serena, we call it. It's like full. It's like binge drinking. Yeah.
And you still go?
Yeah. Now, before I went a lot, but now my like my friends from university, they all
grew up,
started working. So we they grew up also, yeah. Because now, yeah, I'm already studying 6-7 years, maybe 6 years. It's not my 7th year. And if you do it like a regular student, it's 4 years.
Yeah.
So they already have a job. So in winter, before we went out in the, like in November when I can go out, October, November, we went out in the week. But now it's, I have to wait till the weekend to get to see them.
I didn't know this, but do you still study now? Like when you're here in the room?
No, I split it up. I have a top sport facilities on the university, so I can choose when to do my exams. And so I chose to do one in winter most of the time, and then like in February I have 3 weeks on altitude. I have a lot of time over, so I put one exam after, and then I do nothing till after the classics. And now in the end of May, after my next altitude camp, I think I will put another one. And then maybe by the end of the year, another one. So I do 4 or 5 courses in 1 year. It's like half a normal year.
So after cycling, you're going to become the next Patrick Lefebvre. Business in cycling, you're going to have your own team. Or Marc Sargent, should I say, if you're listening, Marc, sorry.
Maybe we will see. On this moment, I don't know yet. I don't know if I will stay in cycling or not. Still a long time to go, I hope. But I have something behind, let's say, and we see.
Not like me. I just have to sell my body after cycling.
Or making podcasts.
Yeah, making podcasts, exactly. But I'm still cycling.
You earn a lot of money with this.
Hey, a lot of money. Super amount. So you're still studying bike riding. The racing's going quite well at the moment, though. I think I didn't really know you until I knew of you, obviously, because you won Strada Bianca, this big race. But you've always been good, and like we said, when you were studying, you still got 5th in Flanders in 2015. Yeah. And have you always wanted to do the Flemish Classics, or is it more been, because when you look at you and your riding style, you think you're more for like the Ardennes Classics, because you're super good on the small long climbs as well, no offense.
Yeah. Actually, when I was on 23, I was always thinking the Ardennes suit me the best.
Yeah.
So this was always, I only did 2 years with under 23, but then the Ardennes were also my main goal, like Liège for under 23. Then the year after, when I was professional, I turned really, I was really, really good. So, but normally Tour of Flanders was not on my program. But then opening weekend I did really well. Then I think some in the GP Samena was 4th.
Yeah.
Hans Samen 3rd. Then Seaport Classic I was 6th. And then in Waregem I was also 6th. It was in Vlaanderen. And then I did my first World Tour race in Harelbeke. I went there till the final. I was also top 20, I think. And I worked for the leader, for Jurgen Roelandsen. And then they said, yeah, okay, you can do also Flanders. So my program changed and I did Flanders and I was 5th. From then on, in Belgium, they boomed me a little bit to a Flemish rider. But I think it's correct when I say maybe the Ardennes suit me more. But like for my the race of my heart is Tour of Flanders.
Oh yeah? It's the one you want to win the most.
The race I always wanted to do, it's the race of my dreams. But for sure in professional cycling, you need to do what suits you best, I think.
Yeah.
For sure nowadays. But yeah, last year I was 8th in Flanders and I really felt I could win the race one day.
Yeah.
When I was 5th, I was more a block on all the climbs and like hanging on. And in the end, I attacked and they let me go. I was 5th. Yeah. Okay. Could be 14th also. But last year I could make the race. I had really good day there. And I was 8th in the end. So gave me trust that I know that I could win the race one day. So I try again this year. Last year also I tried the Ardennes, but after all the classics in Belgium or Flanders, it's hard to
of course
to go on. I did well in Liège, I think, but yeah, just not not fresh enough anymore to be there with the first group in the end. Yeah, but I feel every year I was, without flat tire, I was 8th in Tirreno, last year I was 4th. A lot of other races also with harder parcours, so I can aim for a good result, like the races in Canada, the races San Sebastian.
Yeah,
was already top 10 also, so we decided to go full for the Flemish Classics this year again with Amstel, and then focus on harder races in the second part of the season.
And now you're like classed as a Flandrian because you're doing so good in Flanders. You feel extra pressure or not really from, like, you know, being in Belgium and being, this is the biggest race in Belgium. Yeah. Coming up this weekend, so you feel more pressure from...
I don't know, being in Belgium gives you more pressure, but I think being in a Belgian team in this race is, gives you a little bit more, like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because we're always put next to the Koenig Quickstep.
Yeah.
They win a lot, but there are 17 other World Tour teams, or 16 other World Tour teams, who also are aiming for these races. Mostly all of them have also a leader for these races. And they also don't win on this moment, so it's this makes it a bit hard. It's not hard, but I think still the biggest pressure I feel is the pressure I put on myself.
And then it's good pressure. It's not something from outside.
I'm used to it now.
How old are you now?
20. I just turned 25 in Tirreno.
Same as Caleb.
Yeah, we always raced against each other. Yeah, he was second in Valkenburg, I think.
Yeah, I remember he told me this story. I think also a story in Flanders when he got knocked off in the final.
Yeah, he tried to went through a gap, who was not there. I saw it happening. He just went into the barriers, actually.
Ah.
So then Groenewegen won. Wayne Dole was second, I think, and I was third.
Ah, so, not Irvine, Caleb told me you pushed him into this gap because you wouldn't let him out.
I didn't push him. I came from the other side. That's why I didn't crash. He crashed on the right side, so 10 guys went out, and then I was third.
And this was a good group then.
Yeah, I think we have a
Green Street, Groenewegen.
We have Groenewegen. He is 1 year older than us. Then Caleb and me are from 94. Gaviria is also 94.
Was Gaviria in the break in this race also?
No, I don't think so. He was there, but. Like I want to say, we are a good generation.
Yeah.
Some strong riders now are from my generation. What's normal, you have every generation with strong riders, but yeah, when you do a World Cup race with under 23 and you watch your result 5 years after, 10 years after, you see a lot of good names. Huh?
Yeah, that's good. So with Flanders, we've got Waregem tomorrow. It's sort of... it's not really a test, but the last chance to be in the final, to open the legs before Sunday, and then Sunday, big race, biggest one of the year, yeah. I'd say, apart from the Tour.
In Flanders for sure, yeah.
Feeling good?
Yeah, feeling really good. The legs are open now.
So. Yeah, finally.
Yeah, Friday was a bit unlucky. It was my own fault to mispositioned on the Paterberg. But then Sunday I felt really good, but was hard to put out a nice result because we went with a really big group to the finish in Wevelgem on the flat final. So I was twice there, I think, with good legs, but no big result yet. So I felt good in Tirreno, did fifth in Strade Bianche, happy with the feeling after my crash in opening weekend, but. Yeah, I have the feeling some big results are possible the next 2-3 races for sure. Yeah.
And for you, for Flanders for sure, you want it as hard as possible, I'd say. To win this race, you need it to be full gas from almost 100k out, so you can really get in that good group and make it hard for everyone else also.
Yeah, but I think if you see the race of the last years and also the last races we did now, they are not really races anymore. They go easy till I don't see them go easy till second time Quarmont.
Oh yeah?
No, I see them to go hard more way earlier. Like for example, last year, Quickstep started with the directive they had to keep the race closed like the first 70k or something. So Kese and De Klerk, they They didn't let anyone go.
Yeah.
Just to kill the bunch, to make the race harder. And then, but Flanders, I never did an easy Flanders.
No, it's never an easy Flanders.
I think the race I was 15 was maybe the easiest one, because then Geraint Thomas was a big favorite.
Yeah.
And Team Sky was really riding like they ride in the Grand Tour. So in group, just putting the pace, leaving
the gaps go.
Yeah, yeah. A small breakaway and then controlling the race. But that also proved wrong, so they couldn't win it.
Yeah.
I think this is not a way to win a classic. So and when you see Quickstep, I think they don't want to go to the finish with Van Avermaet or Sagan. So they want to play the numbers in the final and will try to open the race to drop all the helpers of them, and then they can be there with 3-4 guys in the deep final, and then you have Van Avermaet and Sagan who are alone, I think.
Yeah, that's the ideal situation.
Yep.
The only thing with Quickstep is they're always good because they have numbers. It's not like they ever have one leader. It's always like they have 4 guys in the final just because they start the race early.
But still, you need the best guy in the race, I think.
Yeah.
For sure for Flanders. It's also what Van Avermaet said. I think Van Avermaet with his team now is a bit less good than last year. That's normal. And he said, in the last race, it was more important to have a good team, but in Flanders, it's more rider against rider. So...
Yeah. I'll leave you after 50k then, mate.
But like Stibar, Stibar is, I think, is the rider with the best shape on this moment. Maybe next to him, Van Aert. But then he also has the best team, so that makes it more easy. But like Alaphilippe is also just the best rider on this moment, for sure on his parcours.
Yeah. Is he racing?
No, he's not racing, but I mean, they won a lot of races with him. Yeah. Also, Jungles in Kuurne, he's just so good on his own. Yeah. You need a good team, and this is also why they win a lot, but also individually, they're not too bad.
Not too bad, yeah, they're quite good also.
Yeah, they're not too bad, they're quite good, yeah.
Yeah, they are very good.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, Cycling Podcast team car, the back of the pack, please.
That's the voice of Seb Piquet, race radio at the Tour de France, interrupting to remind me to tell you that this episode is sponsored by DNA Fit, who provide genetically guided fitness and nutrition insights for training solutions and long-term health benefits. DNA Fit has helped 50,000 people unlock their health potential through genetically personalized fitness and nutrition insights. Make that 50,001, Richard, because you've sent off your swab of saliva and you've had your results back, and you said last week you were stunned by the results. So what's the story?
Well, I did say that. My big surprise for me was learning that my power endurance response was 80% weighted towards power, where I've always laboured under the impression that I was endurance athlete, in inverted commas, athlete these days. But, being a road cyclist and a cross-country runner and things like that, it seemed that endurance sport was the thing that I was suited to best at and which I enjoyed. So it was very surprising, and I was looking forward to having a chat about it with my consultant at DNA Fit, who's a chap called Tom Lancashire, who is a very good runner himself, competed for Great Britain at the 2008 Olympics in Beijing, middle distance runner. So I had my consultation with him, an hour and a half on the phone, talking through my results and implications for diet and so on. We'll hear some clips from that consultation starting now. I mean, the first thing we spoke about was that surprising result for me of the power endurance response being 80% power, 20% endurance. What, I asked him, did that actually mean?
Are you someone who responds very well to a high intensity power-based approach to exercise, or someone who responds better to a lower intensity, more volume-based approach? So for example, for me as a middle distance runner, if my goal is to run a 4-minute mile, that means the intensity that I'm training to run at is 4 minutes per mile speed. But that doesn't mean that all my training is at that particular speed. So sometimes I'll go and do 200 meter sprints at the track, whatever, which are much faster and power-based. And sometimes I'll go and do a 90-minute long run, which is obviously much more an endurance-based approach. The sort of way I really boil it down is, if we imagine you have just one day a week where you can go and do your bike training, how would you spend that time? And would it be going to a huge, long, nice, easy ride, or would it be actually more of one of these higher intensity rides where it's maybe a little less time in the saddle, but you're really working at a higher rate? And that's what this suggests to us. That's where you get the most bang for your buck.
DNA Fit has robust science behind it. Every gene they look at has at least 3 peer-reviewed studies on human subjects, and in 2016 they released the world's first genetic exercise intervention-based study showing that you can discover what kind of exercise works best for you. DNA Fit are offering 20% off to our listeners, so start your personalised health journey today by heading to dnafit.com/TCP to access the discount code and discover more. That's dnafit.com/TCP.
This week we're also sponsored by the British Heart Foundation, who want us to tell you about the London to Brighton bike ride that's taking place on Sunday, June the 16th this year.
That's right, Richard. The London to Brighton charity bike ride is in its 44th year this year, and it raises money for the British Heart Foundation's research into heart and circulatory diseases, which are responsible for 1 in 4 deaths in the UK. So it's an event for a great cause. It's a 54-mile long ride, and 17 miles of that this year are on completely closed roads. It goes over Ditchling Beacon, which was ridden by the Tour de France peloton in 1994, and the ride finishes on the beach, where you can get a drink and something to eat, and catch up with your fellow riders. All podcast listeners can get £5 off the entry fee by going to bhf.org.uk/L2B2019 and entering the code Brighton5. That's Brighton and the number 5. I did the London to Brighton in 1990 when I was 14, and I can still remember what a great day it was. It was a really sociable ride, and one that suits all types of cyclists. It's challenging, but not a ridiculous challenge, so you don't need to be the sort of rider who takes on the etap every year to get from London to Brighton. And we're going this year, aren't we, Richard? We're putting together a team. I'm hoping to ride my 1990 bike, which I had restored a few years ago. It's a Rally 531 tubing, for those who are interested in this kind of thing, equipped with Campagnolo equipment. 29 years old, though, that bike, nearly 30 years old. So I'm going to have to subject it to some rigorous safety checks, because I'm a little bit heavier now than I was when I was 14. But hopefully it will be up to the job of carrying me to the coast. But we're going to have a great day out no matter what, aren't we? Richard, you'll be riding. Rose Manley from the cycling podcast Feminam will be there. Simon Gill, our photographer, and several of our producers. I think we've got a team of 12 all in all, so it should be a really good fun day. And, well, you can join us or be in the huge peloton that will be heading down to Brighton and get £5 off your entry fee by going to bhf.org.uk/L2B2019 and entering the code Brighton5. Or if you want to sponsor the cycling podcast team, go to justgiving.com/the-cycling-podcast. That's justgiving.com/the-cycling-podcast. We've already raised nearly £1,000, and we're hoping to make it a lot more by mid-June.
So on to another classic that we've not spoke about, Strada Bianca. When you won it, what year was it?
Last year.
I've researched this, but I forgot to write the year.
I was in 18, yeah.
Did you expect it?
I didn't expect it, but I've been already a few times close to a big win. I think when nothing bad happens, I'm there in the final, but it's hard to win a race like on this level for sure without when you don't have a big sprint like Sagan or Van Avermaet. So yeah, I knew it was possible one day, but then Strade Bianche turned out to be a really, like, everything fall into place.
Yeah,
on this one day.
Correct, yeah.
So it was really bad weather, super hard parcours.
You prefer that?
Yeah.
That's quick for tomorrow then.
Yeah, I really like the cold and the rain and everything around. Because for training, I like the sun and more warmer weather. But I know already when it's raining, half of the bunch is complaining and don't want to go out. So you really have if you mentally keep the head up, you have a big advantage.
Also,
I know in bad weather I perform most of the time. I perform better. Was 10 days after I came back from altitude. Also, good period for me. So, yeah, I had a really good day. And the years before, I got twice eight. Then last year, I was first. I won the race. And this year, I was fifth. So it's also, I think, in a race of this kind of level, the race I performed also the best over the 4 years I did it. So I was never out of top eight. So, yeah, it's a race I really like. It's something between the Flemish and Ardennes, Flemish Classics and Ardennes. So it's also, I think, for riders who can do both, it's really, like Stibach, he can also do both. Yeah. I think he also showed also to be really strong. Yeah, Gilbert.
That's good. It was a nice win. I watched it on telly. It was good. Nice. And from when you won that last year, I know it's only a year ago, but have you seen the level go up in cycling over the when you started, especially? Because when I started, it's not. I was speaking to Nicholas the other day, and he said it's not like he's worse. He's better than he was 5 years ago, but the level's just gone up and up and up with everybody. It's not like one guy is. In the past, you had like five guys, Boone and Cancellara, these guys that would always just. You watch these guys in the classics, and they'd ride away. But now there's like 20 guys that can get in that top five, you know. So have you noticed that over the last, well, not since you started, but over the last year especially? I feel like the last 2 years have really changed quite a lot.
Yeah, I think the general level definitely went up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you can now ride 20 minutes full gas, look behind and nobody has dropped. Like one sick guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One guy with diarrhea. One guy who pulled, one guy who crashed.
Diarrhea. It's unbelievable.
It's like this, sure in a World Tour. The World Tour races is, it's like you say, you can also name 20 guys who can do a podium maybe.
Yeah.
In these races, and it's like it is, yeah. Just the general level is went really up. You see it also in the races, and you... The speed is really high, like in Wevelgem. I did some races like this, but it's really exceptional to go over 46 k an hour in a race like this, average. But I like it actually. It's good for me that the races are harder.
Yeah. Especially Wevelgem, that was hard at the weekend.
Yeah.
We did 150 k in under 3 hours. But it's unbelievable. It's like what you normally do in when the race was in Qatar. You used to have races like this, but never in Belgium.
No, on these
roads.
Before, the race would be more controlled, I think.
Yeah.
And I then the big guns go in the end on the Camelberg.
Yeah.
And now, everyone is riding fast.
It's just ridiculous. All this bloody equipment and everything that's making it fast.
Yeah, I think it just, the teams are getting more professional, so everyone gets a more professional treatment.
Yeah.
And treatment is maybe the wrong word.
No, but it's right.
Yeah,
it's, yeah.
Like everything around, like feeding, rest, training. Where before, it was more the talent speaking or the guys who knew for themselves what to do really good.
Yeah.
It's now like everyone has the knowledge.
Yeah. It's true, yeah. Not everyone's like Tomica anymore. Well, everyone is like Tomica used to be. Because he used to have the knowledge, but now everyone's got the same. Google Maps is ruining everything.
Google and Google Maps.
Let me look.
And Wikipedia.
In the final of Flanders, it is hard. And other races you've enjoyed doing. So you've obviously, we spoke about the classics, spoke about the Ardennes. Tour, you did twice.
Yeah, the tour I really liked. It was my first Grand Tour in 17.
Yeah.
It's
not bad to do first Grand Tour being the tour.
Yeah, and top 20, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What were
20th.
You? Still counts.
No. I went there to try to be in the breakaways in the mid-mountain stages.
Yeah, with De Gendt.
With Tim Wallis we had and Tony Gallopin. We were four guys to be in the break that year. Sometimes we were with four in. Before, I was never in an early breakaway, I think. But in the tour, I managed to be in three or four times. And like three times was the break was going to the finish. So for my first Grand Tour, I was happy. Also in the third week. I was still there. That's why I got also top 20 in the end, because there was also a few days where I went into the Gruppetto.
Yeah.
It's
my home.
With the sprinters, yeah. The big fat sprinters.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
No. It's also in the Tour, eh? Or like in the, I did the Vuelta this year also. I was suffering a lot. When you're not on your best level in the mountains,
what's harder?
You can think the guys go easy in the Copetto, but it's not like this. Huh?
No, this is what I say to everyone. The Gruppetto, you see it on TV and you think, oh, it's easy, but it's still, you have to go harder. Yeah. It's not like it's a holiday.
It's just, I had days also with the Vuelta, super steep climbs in the end. I was walking up almost.
Did you?
No. Oh. With the 36, 32. Cannot go easy to the finish then. Eh?
No.
You just have to go full to get to the top of the climb without walking.
Oh, I hate it. We did. You did Angrelou before or not?
No, but I did some steep climbs this year.
You don't do Angrelou ever. I almost cried riding up here. It's so bad.
Yeah, but it's like it is. Also mentally, yeah, you're not riding for the first place anymore. And it's just about getting in the time limit. What also is hard sometimes because the people think, yeah, you choose to be in the Gruppetto, but most of the time you have to fight the first two climbs to survive into the peloton, because if you get dropped alone there, the trouble starts. Huh?
Yeah.
Luckily, I'm normally, when I'm healthy, I don't have a problem to get into the time limit in the Grand Tour, but when you're there, it's not because you have energy left. Huh? So yeah, I really like to do the Tour when I was in 17, and then last year I was also well prepared, I think, but I crashed in stage 4 pretty hard. I broke a vertebra, I had AC luxation, second degree, and then some other small fractures in my ribs, but it was just the other side of the Tour, I think. Or you crash or you get through, and we're preparing the sprint for Greipel, and Small Quintana, he braked suddenly, and I just went into his rear wheel, and then the bike made a bit of turns, and I also did. So it was a big crash.
And what did you do after this, and what was your next race? I didn't know the crash was so bad.
It was Hamburg Vuelta. So I didn't race till Hamburg 1 week before the Vuelta.
Oh, I bet this was a shock.
Yeah. I did first 1 week nothing, and then really, really easy. And then I went on altitude again, and then I started Vuelta. And in the first week, it was a shock, but then, for sure, with the heat, it was almost 40 degrees. But then I started to feel better, and then I crashed again, so was my knee was open.
And it's back open again now, actually.
It's the same injury. The skin is like still, when you have that skin and you crash again on it,
just reopens.
It just torn out, and it's reopens, and it gets only deeper. But now it's stitched, so it should be better.
Should be.
Yeah.
Just don't crash. Fingers crossed. Touch wood.
Yeah. But then I also had to take antibiotics in the Vuelta because they were scared of infections. And then I got diarrhea for 1 week, and you don't want to have this in the Grand Tour.
No. Not at all. And looking to this year, for the rest of the year, what have you? What are your goals? You've obviously got this, and you go until Amstel. No Liège or Liège?
No Liège, normally, no. Then I have some rest. Then I do a restart, maybe in Denkerke.
Yeah.
Switzerland, Championships and Tour.
And the Championships are good for you or not?
It's at my home place, actually. They pass my house.
Oh, nice.
Like on 100 meters, but it's in Ghent.
You can take a bid on from your house.
Yeah. But the first 120k, we make a big loop through the Flemish Ardennes, and we do three times Paddenstraat, Lippenhoven and Langemunte. So I never really like to do championships, because it's a bit like a kermis race on high level, I would say.
Yeah.
You need to be attentive from kilometer zero, because if a group leaves with some guys from Quickstep, from us, from Monty and from Topsport, the race is finished.
Yeah. It's nice. I love the Nationals.
Yeah.
Our Nationals is like this, but not so many teams, but I love it. You have to go from the start and try and find the good group, and then if you're in it, it's easier.
Yeah. But I'm more like racing, when you know more or less where it will happen.
Yeah.
Or where the final starts, let's say.
Yeah.
But now, you just have to think.
The final starts at kilometre zero.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a long final. It's 240k.
It's like Wevelgem. Is that what it is? 240k.
Yeah, normally it was 250, 260, and now they do 240 or 230 or something.
Oh, nice.
But then the final is just laps, eight laps, I think, seven or eight laps in around Ghent, in Drongen, where I'm from. So, flat. So, yeah. But normally, the end of a race like this in Belgium, there are not so many guys who are well adapted to the distance. When I'm in a breakaway like this and we have some cars to play, then there is a chance, but first it's harder to get in, but then I like it they put the cobbles in, so it makes it maybe a bit more easy.
Then you can go a block. And after Nationals, Tour,
and then I go full form for Yorkshire.
Oh yeah? It's beautiful Yorkshire, mate. You saw the course or not?
I saw it just on the map. I've never been to Tour of Yorkshire, so...
Are you missing out? Yeah, I don't know why the team doesn't do it.
The team never did it before, I think. Maybe I did Tour of Great Britain before. I don't know, we passed there.
No, because of Tour of Yorkshire, Tour of Britain never goes into Yorkshire.
Ah, yeah.
So Yorkshire's like a county.
Yeah. And like Pays Basco.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
So they never go in there.
So, But I think the race suits me well. It's some longer climbs in the first lap and then shorter.
It's the world's. It's the longest world's in history. With the neutral, it's 311k.
No.
Yeah.
And UCI, they allowed this.
Yeah.
But I think they never allow races above 300. Huh?
No, it's because of the... Without the neutral, it's 298.
The neutral is 13k.
Yeah. You have to go out of Leeds and then 13k out of Leeds and then it starts.
I like it.
Yeah. Hey, the course is hard, man. Really hard. You go out, do this big lap, and then you come back, and it's like you never have a flat part on the circuit. A little bit, but not a lot.
No, but I like it. I think when I come good out of the tour, you have the legs till the end of the season normally.
Yeah.
And the parkour is something that suits me, so.
Is it strange being in the Flemish team? You did the World last year or not?
Yeah, I never missed the Worlds since 2012, apart from Qatar, I didn't do.
Yeah, you should have. This was a beautiful one.
Yeah, I was first reserve.
Oh, should have done it.
Yeah, but the heat. I heard Adam Blythe did well there.
Yeah, it was good. Cav, not so much. Second. Should have followed me.
No, but I did last year. Last year was not so good after my crash in the Vuelta in...
Austria,
yeah. Year before, I liked to do in York and Norway. And then Richmond also did, and then the other one with under 23 and juniors.
How is it in this Belgium team for the Nationals, for the World? It's nice, or is it a little bit...
It's nice most of the time, yeah. I think they're all nice guys.
Yeah, there's no egos, no one saying, no one like, oh, you have to work for me, or...
No, but most of the time it's clear, like last year was a bit double because we don't have a real climber.
Yeah.
But the year before was always like Richmond.
Yeah.
Qatar I didn't do, but we're also the same guys.
Yeah.
Then Norway also. There's always with Craig Feel.
Yeah.
The leaders are clearer.
Yeah.
And then you have some strong guys around. But
I can imagine the meetings though is strange because you have Tim Wellens,
yeah.
Phil, Greg, Nason, Narsen.
Yeah, Narsen, yeah.
And you're all...
Sturven,
you're all, not so much Sturven anymore, but you're all like similar riders, eh? You can all do the short climbs.
Yeah.
So for Yorkshire, you should all be in the front.
Yeah. Maybe how many guys can start? Eight guys?
Yeah.
I think we should play a quick step tactic, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, in a quick step tactic. Ah, we see, we have a new bond coach now.
Ah, yeah, who is it?
Now it's Rick Verbrugge, the manager of Bahrain Merida.
I know Rick. Not anymore. He's not in Bahrain anymore.
He's out?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, this I didn't know. But
hey, but you have to be careful because he's Greg's sister's husband. So he's always going to favourite Greg.
Yeah.
Sorry, Greg.
Maybe
sorry,
Greg. Greg has another sister.
Yeah, true. Voila.
No, just joking around. But I think on this level, everyone is professional.
Yeah.
And I don't doubt about it. That Rick will be also have good contact with them, so should be fine.
Just have to say sorry, mate. It's on me this year.
No, but I think also, like maybe Norway was the biggest could give the biggest troubles in the Belgian team.
Yeah.
But in the end, everyone did his job and everyone did good. So
yeah, yeah. Where did Greg come in this?
Yeah, but in the end, it was a bench sprint with 25 guys, I think.
Oh, yeah. Where was Greg?
8 or something, I don't know.
Oh, that's pretty good. Still good. Right, mate, that's
where
all.
Where were you, Adam?
I helped Swift because he had a flat, and then I got dropped on this climb.
It was a nice parcours. A lot of people.
It was nice, but also not the best. It was good, but it's never really...
If it would have rained like the other 364 days in Norway,
then it would have been different. It would have been so cold. Holland started this race early. You remember, Terpstra started it with like 5K to go. 5 laps to go. They opened the race up so early.
I don't know, Tim jumped into the break, as I remembered. Maybe with Terpstra.
Oh, it was so hard. I remember because Swift punctured, Dool and Dibben brought him back. And then when he came back to the bunch and I was already going backwards, I said, oh, this is not good. Already 3 laps to go. But yeah, Swift got fourth.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
How is he doing now?
He's good, actually. He broke his... sorry, this is a bit off the subject, but he's good. He crashed in Tenerife. Had some problems with the spleen. Spleen.
Yep.
So he had to have 3 months off, and then 3 weeks off completely, and then he started on the home trainer. He did 27 hours on the home trainer in 1 week. Crazy guy. And then now he's back on the road. I think he starts in 2 weeks, maybe.
Okay.
So he'll be good. A is time for Yorkshire.
That's true.
Yeah. Right, that's it, mate. I don't have any more questions. Do you have any questions you want to ask?
No.
Good. Right, I'm going to leave Tish alone because he's in bed preparing and watching football. Is this goalkeeper good or not?
Will she? No, he lets the ball through. Oh, he's shit.
Brilliant. Right, thank you very much. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Thanks, Tish.
Thanks, I also enjoyed it.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport, who've been long-time sponsors of the Cycling Podcast, and their support is invaluable. They're also offering 25% to you, the listener, at the website scienceandsport.com. If you enter the code SISCP25 at the checkout, so when you're buying your sports nutrition products, get 25% off with the code SISCP25. Now, Lionel, that was Tish Benoot in conversation with Adam Blythe, or Adam Blythe in conversation with Tish Benoot, if you prefer. Wasn't surprised to hear at the end there that Tish Benoot was in bed throughout the interview, because he did sound very relaxed indeed.
Very laid back, considering... when was that recorded exactly? Because just a few days before the Tour of Flanders, no?
Well, just the day after, or a couple of days after Gent-Wevelgem.
Right, so yeah, he's getting his feet up ready for the weekend's race. But what did you make of Benoot? He's a character that we don't know an awful lot about, really, despite the fact that he's, you know, burst onto the scene and has been around for a few years now. But what did you make of him?
Very impressed by him. I interviewed him a couple of years ago, as I mentioned at the start, on a training camp in Mallorca, and I found him to be an interesting guy, quite open there. I was interested in his studies. You know, he's clearly somebody who, he's got his head switched on, hasn't he? His head switched on, is that the correct expression?
Head screwed on, I think.
Screwed on, sorry. He's got his head screwed on. Don't know what it says about me that I can't even
Your head is screwed on, but all the wires are still loose.
Anyway, very impressive young man, pursuing a career as a professional cyclist while also studying and really being quite committed to his studies. So that was impressive. But I've found since then at races that he's quite a tough guy to interview. You do encounter riders like this who are so kind of focused and in the zone at races that they don't really like to break off and speak to journalists very much. And I don't think it's that he's not friendly or anything, or that he's not open to chatting, but I just think that he is one of these people who probably feels quite a lot of pressure at races. So haven't really spoken to him much the last couple of years. So it was interesting to hear him speak so openly and in such a relaxed way with Adam there. And, you know, obviously interested that he's still continuing with his studies all these years later, and that's very impressive. But yeah, I mean, just you know, as you said at the start, 20th at the Tour de France, as well as his results in one day races, he's still very versatile and obviously a huge engine. And we still don't really know what sort of rider he's going to be towards his sort of late 20s. Maybe a Tim Wellens sort. I don't know. You know, so he could target 1 week stage races as well. The beauty of that team, I think, is that there's such an array of different talents in that team and real individuals. You know, Thomas De Gendt, Tim Wellens, Tesh Benoot, and there seems to be room in that team and scope in that team for them to express themselves however they want.
A lot of pressure, though, isn't there? Because their neighbours and rivals, De Koenig, Quickstep, just keep on winning, and they put Lotto Soudal in the shade a little bit, certainly as far as kind of the Belgian media goes. So big weekend coming up for them.
Absolutely, but what was interesting was hearing from Benoot there the respect that he clearly has for De Koenig, Quickstep. It doesn't feel like there's a kind of bitter rivalry there. It's more a kind of respect for what they do and how they do it. As he said, they do have some quite good bike riders on that team. And I thought Adam's questioning of how things work in the Belgian team was really interesting, because you do have a coming together of big champions from different teams and potentially big egos. And there have been problems in the Belgian teams in the past, you know, most notably in the 70s with Freddie Martins and Eddy Merckx, and you know, great stories from those world championships. But Benoot, they're describing quite a different scenario where you can imagine riders like Greg Van Avermaet, you know, maybe big champions, but maybe not such big egos currently in the Belgian picture.
Well, we'll see how that all plays out at the World Championships in Yorkshire, where they'll undoubtedly be one of the strongest teams on that course.
And I did enjoy also the relish in Benoot's voice at the prospect of it being the longest World Championship ever. You know, as we've said a couple of times, he is somebody who relishes really tough races where there's a sort of grinding down process. And, you know, again, if it's a tough day, bad weather in Yorkshire, we hope not, but he will be hoping it is, because he does love the bad weather, as he said.
Well, it could be a bit of everything in Yorkshire. You could get, as famously been said, you can get four seasons in a day in Yorkshire, so we should wait and see. Anyway,
watch out for Benoot in Yorkshire, clearly.
Well, there we go. Episode 3 of the Adam Blythe interviews. Halfway, 3 more to go. Are we going to announce who's next, or let the listeners find out in due course?
I think keep the sense of surprise and suspense, shall we, Lionel?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And keep your suggestions coming as well, because he's still got one slot to fill, I believe. So, you know, he might still be open to suggestions if anybody's got somebody they'd like him to interview.
Cutting it fine, isn't he, Mr. Blythe? I mean, you know, this is the elite sportsman in him. No stress about the onrushing finish line. He's making
casually,
us,
casually making us panic a bit. Conducting interviews in bed.
Let's announce a 6-part series with only 2 in the can.
In bed with Adam Blythe. Anyway, we should wrap things up. We'll be back next week introducing episode 4 of Adam Blythe Interviews. In the meantime, thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
You have been listening to The Cycling Podcast. Subscribe to our newsletter at thecyclingpodcast.com to get all the latest news and special offers delivered straight to your inbox. This episode was edited and produced by Tom Wally.